Hello and welcome back to PaleoCast. My name is Dave Marshall, and this is the second part of our interview on the Las Hoyas fossil Largastetta with Angela Delgado Buscaglione and Francisco José Poyato Ariza. In the first part of this interview, we focused on the details of the locality, where it is, how old it is, and what kind of paleo environment it represents. Now, in the second part, we're going to concentrate on the different organisms present, the completeness of the food web, and then the significance of the site. Obviously, if you haven't yet listened to the first part of this interview, please go to our website to find it, along with many pictures of the Las Hoyas site and the fossils therein. If you enjoy this episode, please support us on social media with a like and a share, and don't forget to get in touch. Do you want to hear more about other Largastetta, or perhaps a group of fossils in particular? Leave us a comment and we'll see what we can do. In the meantime, I hope you enjoy hearing more about this remarkable locality. Right, so I think we've got a pretty good idea of what the environment at Las Hoyas was and how things are preserved. So let's talk about some of the animals that we get there first. So what kinds of groups have we got represented? I mean, we've already spoken about crocodiles, about birds, about salamanders and insects. What else have we got?
Well, fishes, of course. Las Hoyas is quite interesting from the ichthyological point of view, because it's the youngest locality with a typically Jurassic fauna. I mean, there are endemisms, but they belong to groups that are typical from the Jurassic. So let's say it's the last or the youngest relict ichthyofauna. After that, teleosteans would take over during the rest of the Cretaceous. So fishes are very interesting too. And of course, insects. We think insects are probably the key of the food web of the ecosystems, both in land and in water.
And the insect, the two groups better represented in Las Hoyas are the coleopterans and the pteropterans. But there are many different types of insects. There are 14 orders and 40 families.
Wow.
So this is a huge, the specialist working on insect has recognized that it is one of the most diverse locality for the early Cretaceous along Europe.
And so are fish and insects really the most common fossils that you'll find?
In number, yes, probably, together with decapods and plants.
And so what's the rarest thing, like the most important, the most unique thing to come out of Las Hoyas?
Angela is smiling.
No, you have to to think about that we have different environment represented. The aquatic environment has a very rich diversity, and there's very abundant in fossils. The amphibious environment, where we place organisms such as frogs or salamanders or crocodiles, is fairly well represented. But the terrestrial environment is very rich, but the number of fossils are not so abundant. So, for instance, in the case of vertebrate, you may see that we have only one theropod, basal theropod, which is Concavenato or Corcovatus, a Carcharodontosaurid, and only one specimen of one ornithomimid dinosaur. And there is no more dinosaur except an ornithopod food, isolated food we found. The same occurs with other group, like mammals. Since 30 years, we never found a mammal at La Soya.
Not a single tooth.
Not a single tooth, yeah. So in 5 years ago, we found a complete specimen of Euchirconodon gobiconodont mammal. So this mammal is complete, are completely articulated and preserve the hair and preserve the lungs and preserve the limit of the liver and preserve
all the teeth in place,
all the showing teeth nicely. In place. So why we didn't found things like that? Probably because this organism has a terrestrial habit. So it's these terrestrial animals are very scarce in the ecosystem.
But also for the fishes, there are very rare things. There are coelacanths, which are really strange. And we have the smallest shark in the world. We call it Pablito. And it's about 4.5 centimeters long in all.
Was that just a baby one, or was it just is it a fully grown adult?
Yeah, it's a baby of a dwarf shark. So really the smallest. Yeah, it's a beauty.
Do you get pterosaurs there?
Yeah, it was also a very strange fossil. We got a Tapejari pterosaur, a new genus and species, which is called Europejara olcadesorum. And this pterosaur was more or less complete. I mean, the skull was a fragment of mandible, of the jaw, and that was the sole bone evidence we found, except for some isolated tooth.
There are four isolated teeth of different types of pterosaur. With the terrestrial fauna, the thing is that there are very, very few specimens, but they usually represent different taxa. So, because the fauna was very varied.
So most people would just focus on the animals and just stop there, but Las Hoyas also preserves much more than just animal life. So, what kinds of plant or fungi or microbial life can we also find?
Well, the book really introduced one of the studies never done before at Las Hoyas, which is palynomorph, the pollen. And in that case, there are many angiosperms pollen. The plants at Las Hoyas can be typified according to different environments. So you have hydrophilic vegetation. You have also vegetation growing in marsh and swamps, and also savanna-like vegetation. So you can imagine that it's very diverse. For the hydrophilic vegetation, as I told you, you have two groups, charophytes and aquatic angiosperms. And for the plants growing in marshes and swamps, the most abundant are Phrenolopsis, which is Caryolepidaceans, conifer, but there is also other conifers such as Cupressinocladus or different type of Pachyophyllum, different type of conifers. But in the savanna-like vegetation, what is dominant is a fern, Bechelia, which is a tree fern. With a very big pinna that probably make this savanna area a shadow area for animals, for terrestrial animals.
Is it the case that with the palynological data, all the pollen and stuff like that, that there's more of a diversity of plants than there are of animals?
Yeah, we did a kind of a study about what were the group more diversified at Las Ollas. And insect wins all time. The plants are very diverse, but not as much as insect. In fact, this is very, very curious. When we analyze the ecosystem, the hub, the really important hub, connecting all the trophic ways of path of different groups were insect totally, not plants. So there are not many vertebrate eating, herbivorous vertebrate, for instance, and insect were playing the role of destroying, I mean, feeding on plants and making making that the energy of this ecosystem flows to the detritus. I mean, to be rich in detritus.
So you say that we didn't have the herbivores there and it was the insects eating all of the plant material. Is there anything else in Las Hoyas that you would expect to see that isn't there?
Snakes?
Snakes. But a snake, the origin of a snake is not continental, so... No.
Not really.
Not really.
And do you have representatives from every trophic level? Like every kind of niche or paleoecology?
Actually, what we have, and it is in the book, and it's another path for future studies, is a trophic web. And yes, we have... All the nodes, all the hubs of a very complex trophic web.
So having a food web of all of the taxa that you found in Las Hoyas, was that particularly complex? Are there thousands of connections in between each of the taxa?
Yeah, it's really complex, and it's still work in progress. So what we have in the book is the most preliminary food web. Now we have to work on the details of that web and publish in detail. But yes, it's quite complete, and it's quite complex. But it's also in accordance with the way food webs look in recent wetlands.
Right. And so to summarize,
we have some data here. The first web has 57 vertices, nodes, and 476 links.
And how does that compare to the modern ones?
In the general structure, in the way insects are the key connection of the web, both in the land and in the water.
Yes, the wetland, recent wetland have different webs, hubs. For instance, you may have recent wetland, which insects are the main source, trophic source, but also you may have also other wetlands in which gastropods are the main source, the main trophic source. So, we think that the ancient or more primitive wetland trophics concern the relevance of insect in the trophic distribution
structure.
So and makes sense, and this makes sense.
So to summarize, is the significance of the Las Hoyas Lagerstätte the fact that you've got this complete ecosystem? Is it the uniqueness of the island's fauna and flora? Or is it the preservation? What is the main significance? Or is it all of the above?
Yeah, we'd say it's the combination of all of them that makes Las Hoyas really unique. I mean, when we talk about the biota, we are confident that it's an actual biota within reasonable terms, that these organisms were sharing really the same ecosystem.
And how has Las Hoyas been received internationally? Is it world-renowned for being the best fossil site of its age or the best one in the Iberian Peninsula?
Well, there are about 300 of papers concerning Las Hoyas groups. Many of these papers have been published in very important journals, and the groups they describe are relevant phylogenetically. Most of these groups, for instance, an invertebrate, are phylogenetically placed as a stem group of modern organism, of modern and diverse groups, recent groups. So in that sense, Las Hoyas is well known. I mean, for instance, lizards, salamander, frogs, crocodiles, fishes, all these vertebrate has been quite known because there are many descriptions of new species, and also there are many revisions phylogenetically of important groups. But I think that the international relevance of Las Hoyas as a whole ecosystem never occurred and has just occurred with the publication of this monography.
Okay, and politically, how has it been received by the Spanish population? Is it well known about? Do the government protect it? I think you said that they did, didn't you?
Yeah, the regional, I mean, if you mean the Las Hoyas is protected by the regional government. There's a law declaring it a point of a protected point. And there is a fence around it and everything. Or you mean the book?
No, I mean the actual fossil locality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's very well known and very well protected. All the people in the region know about it. So yeah. Mm-hmm. And they are aware of its importance.
Have you ever had any problems with poaching?
Not really. Precisely because people in the area are very are very aware of the relevance of the locality. We've never seen fossils in any market or anything like that. So not really. Surprisingly enough.
That's good news.
And yes, so, yes, for once.
Does all the material get displayed in a museum? Do you have the Las Hoyas Museum of the Birimian Wetlands?
Yeah, the collection. Las Hoyas has his own collection. And the collection comprises around 20,000 of specimens. And recently, there is a new museum. This is a paleontological museum where the material from Las Hoyas is exposed, but also there are other relevant localities in the area. So this paleontological museum is gathers different places showing different ages and fossils in the what is called Castilla-La Mancha, that is a community.
The central region of Spain. So it shares a very nice and modern museum with other localities from the late Cretaceous and the Cenozoic.
And 30,000.
All the fossils are housed in this single collection, which is we also think. It's very important.
And 30,000 specimens, you say? Have these museums got huge warehouses with plenty of space? Because I assume that many, many, many more fossils are going to be dug out.
Actually, there are so many specimens that we start in the field by cutting out as much as we can from the slabs for the fossils we keep. Because it's really a problem. Space is really a problem.
Yeah, I think that that we are working with the slabs, so the slabs are not difficult to house, and also that the fossils from Las Hoyas are not very big. So the mean size we found is around 1 centimeter. For many, many, many fossils, 1.5 centimeter. Of course, you have large fossils such as the dinosaurs or
long fishes. What we call long fishes in Las Hoyas can be 30 or 40 centimeters. So many of the fossils are juveniles. So fossils themselves are, most of them are really small. But because there are so many, of course, space is a problem. So we have some special system like in other museums, but it's becoming more and more of a problem.
Okay, so what's the next big story to come out of Las Hoyas?
Well, we are now working on coprolites. The museum houses around 2,000 specimens of coprolites.
And that's fossil and poo, yes?
Yes.
Yeah. So we are trying to make not only a morphological study, but the content, what is called inclusions. And the inclusions are very diverse and very rich. I mean, the coprolites are plenty of inclusions. But we want to study also, analyze these fossils isotopically, and also trying to do some molecular taphonomy. So this is going to be a nice work next. We are also working with the plants, the diversity of ferns, and now we continue working with birds.
Yeah, and there's a very strange group of arthropods which are being studied. There's opiliones in English.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of arachnid-like arthropod, not really spiders. Daddy long legs.
Yeah, harvestmen. I think we call them here.
Harvestmen. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
And of course we will continue working on the trophic web.
And anything new that appears. Actually, as a matter of fact, the book has taken so long that we had to prepare an addendum with new findings that were made during the making of the book.
I think you could write that book for the rest of your lives, I think.
No, that's once in a lifetime, and that's it. The next book is for the next generation of paleontologists.
So let's talk about this book. I mean, you've mentioned it a few times in the episode. What's it all about? What's the concept behind it?
Well, the book, the germ of the idea, the core of the idea, was to include a synthesis of all what we know about Las Hoyas. So the book starts with a short historical section where people who were involved in the finding of the locality write about their experiences. Then there is a strong section on the geology of the locality itself and the surroundings. Then we have the palynomorphs and plants, and then we have every single animal group that has been described in Las Hoyas. And for each group, we have asked the specialists to be consistent in a way of describing taxonomy, phylogeny, lifestyle, and relevance in the Mesozoic of the corresponding group. So we have, let me look at the index. We have 23 taxonomic chapters of different groups. This is the second part of the book, the fossil record. Then there is a third section on taphonomy with all the experiments on molecular taphonomy and on actual taphonomy. And then the final section is paleoecology, where there is a synthesis of all the information with very nice restorations from made by very young paleoartists. And Guille is one of them. There are a couple of very nice drawings from Guille in the book.
So it's really a comprehensive look at the Lagerstätte and absolutely everything about it.
Yeah, that was our goal when making the book.
And so how long is it?
If you want to know something about Las Hoyas, you know you're going to find it in the book.
So how long have you been producing it?
6 long years. So it was a time. First, I mean, it's difficult to manage the authors because we ask them to be very conscious of the question we made. So that was difficult to get all the book with the same spirit. And this is why it took so long time, because we go back and forward, trying to fit all the chapters homogeneous.
Yeah, trying to provide a homogeneous, not only look, but content of each single chapter. And also, we have to say that because the publisher is very demanding. He's a high-quality publisher. He's a Friedrich Feil from München. He's a paleontologist, too. And he publishes beautiful, wonderful books on paleontology. But he is very demanding with the text and the figures, the quality of the photographs, the definition of the drawings and everything. So this book has the same format than the Archaeopteryx book and the Solenhofen books. So it's really a very conscious work from authors to publisher. So that's why it has taken so long. But we are very happy with the result. I mean, the result of the publishers being so demanding is that the book is, maybe we shouldn't say that, but the book is very beautiful. We were surprised by the book when we saw it first.
Yeah, I wrote the script for this episode based off of the book and what I'd seen, and it was very, very nice, I have to say. And I also have to say that I'm not being paid to say that by the publisher. I wish I was.
Neither are we.
But anyway, do you think there'll be a Las Hoyas 2?
No, not we. I don't think so. I think the book has also the spirit of our research. And then we have changed from the taxonomical part of the study toward the paleontological part of the study during these 25, 30 years. So the book has this spirit.
Actually, it has a whole chapter on how we have gone from taphonomy to paleoecology.
Mm-hmm. And for the second book, it would be necessary to spread the ecological part. And this cannot be made in 1 year. It takes also many years to be done. So, in fact, those books are the books of live people, in the sense that, for instance, Francisco start working how many years? 30 years ago, and myself also. It's our whole life working in the area and trying to make sense and to get a coherence in our work.
And it's the work of dozens of specialists. Mm-hmm. So it's really a huge amount of work inside, so it's really hard to collect and to think of. It's really hard to think of a second book.
Yeah.
Not in a short time anyway.
Sure. So now that it's done, you've got your book published. What are you going to do? Are you going to go back in the field and look for some more fossils?
No, we go back to teaching. Actually, no. Yes. Yeah. We do field works every year, and one of the most difficult things for us is to manage the collection. The collection is so big that we have to be constantly updating it, like the data bank and the housing of the fossils themselves, the way they are kept. So we have to be actualizing and updating the collection all the time. And for ourselves, well, I was joking, but actually finding the time for research is very, very difficult when you are teaching so heavily. So yes, we have, and we have our own research. So Angela is working on crocodiles. I try to find some time for fishes. So we're not book writers, actually, but I don't know. Maybe if ever I would like to write a book on evolution. I mean, many biology students and even many biologists think that they know how evolution works, but actually they don't. So it's an issue that is very interesting for me, but maybe someday.
Okay, well, if anything new comes out of Las Hoyas, make sure you come back and tell us. But otherwise, thank you very much for joining us today. I've had a great time.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for inviting us. And you will be welcome to Las Hoyas anytime.
Of course. Thank you. Brilliant. I'll see you there.
Okay, bye-bye. We hope so. Bye.
PaleoCast was brought to you by Dave Marshall, with Joe Keating, Laura Soule, Liz Martin-Silverstone and Caitlin Coleri. It was made possible by funding from the Paleontological Society and the Paleontological Association, but the show now relies on contributions from you, the listeners. If you've liked this episode, please consider donating, and thanks to everyone that's helped out so far. We'd also like to thank the Ocean Collective for use of their music. Please visit paleocast.com for the supplementary material to this episode and for our archive of past programmes. Subscribe to our Twitter feed @PaleoCast and like us at facebook.com/PaleoCast to get all the latest news.